This is the OANDA podcast.
This is the OANDA Market Insights podcast, talking to OANDA senior market analysts from across the globe. And today, I'm delighted to say it is Ed Moyer in New York. Good afternoon from London. How are you doing, Ed?
Hi, Johnny. I'm wonderful.
Fairly volatile week for markets. We started with some jitters in various regions, mainly down to the Delta variant, but that was fairly short-lived, was it not?
Yes, it appears Monday was predominantly a growth scare. I mean, we saw the Dow Jones Industrial post its largest decline of the year. There was some nervousness. I mean, the market has been filled with froth, so you did see some heightened selling. You know, fascinating to see that over about one-third of the stocks on the New York Stock Exchange were down about 20%. So you have a good portion of stocks in bear market territory, given what was, for the most part, a short-lived little blip. And I think right now you're seeing that investors are, you know, really impressed with earnings season. We're still having fairly large amount of stimulus getting pumped into the system. And we're on the verge of getting more infrastructure spending progress. I think next week is going to be key, but we're probably going to see Democrats. I think eventually when it's all said and done with all this back and forth negotiation, and probably by September, we'll be talking about a $2 trillion infrastructure deal that's going to get stretched through, the next decade. And that's very positive for stocks. So I think you have that. And in addition to, you know, probably the Fed and the ECB are going to be, I think, one and the other. They're basically signaling there's going to be a lot more accommodation. And I think what this week has shown us is that, you know, the U.S. consumer is resilient and so far able to handle these price increases. So it looks like there's still a lot of optimism here for U.S. equities. And that's why today we've seen the S&P 500, push towards an intraday record high. So it looks like risk, you know, quickly got its groove back. And you know what? There's not been any major improvements with the Delta variant jitters. I mean, we're still seeing, you know, the lockdown scenarios remain elevated. But I mean, we're not going to see drastic restrictions like we saw months ago. So I think we're probably going to see the market is going to be able to adapt to that. There's this belief, you know, for countries that are getting, you know, struggling with the Delta variant, they're probably going to, you know, mirror the playbook we saw in India, where it's 4 to 6 weeks of some tough times, but then you're going to see cases decline, and hopefully economic activity will improve. And I think that's kind of why markets are still fairly upbeat. And that's kind of some of that volatility we saw this week.
I'm interested to know what the view of the UK is, and specifically England, from where you are, Ed, because what we're doing here in this country is really the opposite of almost everywhere else in the world. Despite rising cases, we have more freedoms, and the cases continue to rise. Maybe a bit of a drop off over the last 24 hours, which is encouraging news. But the government here is taking a massive gamble. It might pay off. It might not. I just wonder whether, you know, you're in the U.S., you're looking at us as one great big medical experiment.
Unfortunately, there's not a lot of clarity as far as, well, I think everyone, for the most part, feels that, you know, depending on which vaccination you have, and, you know, if your population has had the majority of mRNA vaccines or the AstraZeneca vaccines, they're holding up well against the Delta variant as far as not leading to hospitalizations. The concern is that, you know, as the rest of the world is struggling with COVID, you know, some of them are seeing that the Sinovac vaccine is not doing too well. So I think you're probably going to have this really difficult lens to see exactly, well, which, how much should we restrict indoor activity? How much, as far as, you know, your population, you know, how successful, your current, vaccinated population going to be against the current threat. And right now, I think you're probably going to see that a lot of countries they're fed up with these restrictions. And I think what you're probably going to see is that there's this movement that you know, we have to learn to live with COVID, and that's across many states here in the U.S. I think there's some states that have terrible vaccination rates, but they're going forward with reopening regardless of, you know, what we see in spikes in cases and in hospitalizations. So I think, you know, the world is adapting to COVID, and I think, you know, everyone is hoping that we don't see, you know, the hospitalization struggles and healthcare capacity systems be at risk. But I think right now there's, you know, there's still a large amount of the population that has been vaccinated. And I think right now it's still fairly upbeat. I think that's why you're seeing UK assets have been performing pretty well. And I think that you're probably going to see there is more momentum to be had once this Delta variant concerns ease.
Let's talk about oil. And pretty exciting trade this week. Inventory showing first build since May. We, of course, had the news from OPEC Plus about the decision to increase supply, which saw the numbers drop. What's happening at the moment?
The reaction at the start of the week was a little tricky because, you know, some people were thinking that, oh, OPEC Plus is raising output 400,000 barrels in August. Well, that's more supply. That's, you know, that should be bad for prices. And then you had the Delta variant jitters, you know, global growth concerns, and oil prices were extremely vulnerable. And when you consider how V-shaped the rebound in oil prices have been over the last several months, I think, you know, there was an easy opportunity here for most energy traders to just lock in some profits. But I think, you know, and you know, from the record highs from just a couple, not record highs, from the recent highs of around $77 a barrel, you know, we dropped 15%. And I think what, you know, the energy market quickly remembered was that this market is extremely in deficit. The demand, even with the current Delta variant jitters and some restrictions that we've seen imposed across some countries, demand is still outpacing supply. So I think we're seeing, you know, in June, you know, it was about 2.3 million barrels per day. OPEC Plus is going to raise output by 400,000. And of that 400,000, it's unlikely they're really going to be able to deliver that. Some of the countries that are supposed to raise output won't be able to do it as fast. And you'll probably really see just about maybe over 300,000 barrels come in August, which means we're still at a very strong deficit here, which means you know, oil is—it's all about supply and demand right now, and right now it's just this market is poised to rip higher. So I think you have a lot of energy traders that are still you know, touting $80 oil as a firm likelihood, and right now, given the market dynamics, you're probably going to see that's going to be the case. So that, I think there's still a lot of oil bulls out there, and right now, you know, you take a look at U.S. production. It's not going to go much higher than where we are at 11.4 million barrels per day. And I think we've heard from lots of oil companies, you know, shale production is not going to go up, even though we have higher prices. There's a lot of companies that still they have to exercise financial discipline here and defend the balance sheets. And guess what? They, you know, right now, if you're an energy company, it's about survival still. And you're probably going to see more focus on increasing dividends. The larger oil companies are focused on increasing their cleaner energy offerings. And I think right now, oil still seems like it's poised to rally higher.
And I recall at the end of our podcast last week, you pointed ahead to the ECB and what might come out of that particular meeting. And off air, you said to me it was a bit of a dud in the end. Still, it's important to look ahead to the September meeting.
There was a lot of expectations that this was going to be a live meeting. And I think what we really saw was the ECB really just delivered mostly dovish tones. I think their new guidance on interest rates. What it did, it really, I think, pushed back the odds of a hike by, you know, several years. And I think that you're probably going to see that the debate amongst you know, ECB officials is really going to heat up. I think a lot of officials are going to want looser links between QE and the QE exit and interest rates. And I think right now the concern is that we're going to probably see in September they're going to boost the PEP. And right now I think, you're really at a juncture where, you know, this volatility in currencies, it's going to struggle, I think, for the euro dollar, because I think you're going to see traders are going to view there's just no signs of any immediate easing as far as support to the economy, and it's currency wars all over again. So I think it's going to be a difficult trade on euro dollar. So you might start to see some broadening formations, but right now everyone's going to, you know, really look to see, you know, which economy is going to be in a better position to start tightening. And right now, I think the argument is that, you know, you're probably going to see the U.S. just because we're actually seeing inflationary pressures. And I think there's a stronger likelihood that that's the case. So that's going to, you know, really put a dent in a lot of people anticipating, a stronger euro.
It was a topsy-turvy week for Bitcoin, wasn't it? When we spoke last week, it had dipped below $30,000. But Mr. Elon Musk came to the rescue, didn't he? When he said that Tesla is most likely to start accepting it as a payment again. He must enjoy playing with the Bitcoin numbers.
I think the B conference was a heavily anticipated event. And, typically when we have, it seems like every few months now we're getting some type of crypto conference. There's always some type of buzz, and there's always some type of optimistic tones that are delivered to the market. And I think Musk's pivot should not come as a surprise. The Bitcoin Mining Council, which he's a part of, they've highlighted the improvement in mining going into renewables. And I think, Musk has always, supported the notion that, once the mining situation is clearly showing substantial progress towards using renewables, I think you're going to see that there is a heavy expectation. You're not only going to see Tesla probably accepted as payment, you might even see them, put more of it on their balance sheet. Musk signaled that he personally owns Bitcoin, and also that SpaceX does. So I think there's this belief that, okay, we're probably closer to seeing, more support from Elon Musk and his, he still has a loyal following on social media, even though a lot of people were not happy with him over the past few months. I think you're also probably going to see that, the focus is heavily on the institutional world. And, this week what we saw was Fidelity, they came out with a survey, and it showed that the institutional world is still extremely interested in going into cryptos. And I think that right now you're probably seeing that there's about 7 in 10 institutional traders that are still looking to add digital assets to their portfolio. So, the opportunity for massive investments is still there. And, we also heard from Twitter that they're, looking to make Bitcoin a part of their future. And, they might accept payment in Bitcoin. And I think as you hear more companies start to do that, that just further cements the longer term bullish case, which now it seems, Bitcoin is now, back into its healthy consolidation zone, which was that 30 to 40,000 level. But I think if you get more endorsements over these coming weeks, you could see that momentum really grow. So it looks like Bitcoin has dodged the bullet as far as avoiding the collapse to 20,000.
Okay, Ed, before we let you go and enjoy your weekend, what should we look out for in the next week or so before we talk again next Friday?
The main event is going to be the FOMC. So I think next week there's a lot of GDP and CPI releases globally, but I think you're going to see everyone is going to be focused on the Fed. I think taper discussions are going to intensify. I think after that policy meeting, we're going to really be able to, I think right off, you know, Jackson Hole. I think there was, I was part of the camp that thought that Jackson Hole was going to be the perfect opportunity for the Fed to signal a formal announcement on tapering. Jackson Hole, maybe he'll provide some hints, but I think this meeting is going to solidify that they're still in wait and see mode. The debate will intensify, and we'll probably have some more clarity on the way they'll taper. But I think you're not going to see any significant developments as far as or firm commitments that that'll happen in Jackson Hole, which means we're maybe looking at September or later, and that ultimately is rather dovish, given you know the strength of the economic recovery, and I think that that's going to probably be the you know the main event. I think also, which is just as important, you know, this week the Biden administration was hoping to make more progress on infrastructure spending. That's gotten pushed into next week, so I think. You're going to see a lot of people become fixated on that. Also, we have to you know focus on the budget and the debt ceiling. so that's going to be dominating a lot of the headlines too. As far as rate decisions go, there's another one I think with Hungary, which they're expected to tighten, but that's not going to I think garner too much attention. And then also you know I think with Europe, you're going to see you know GDP. Be a key one. I think a lot of people were anticipating. I think more, not the exiting. You know, some of that weakness. I think the second quarter has provided a nice rebound for the euro area, and I think you're going to see that end the recession gloom. So I think there's a lot of optimism, I think, for a lot of these data. This is going to be peak growth for some countries. And over in Australia, we'll probably see a lot of focus on the CPI that's expected to spike higher. So it's a not as busy as the past couple of weeks, but I think that, you know, as far as the economic data and central bank meetings, that's kind of what's on my radar. And lastly, it's earnings season. This is a peak earnings season. We get big tech this week. So, you know, as big tech goes, you know, that really will determine, I think, whether or not we continue to push further into record high territory. We have Apple, Amazon, Alphabet, Facebook, Microsoft, all reporting next week. So that should provide, I think, a lot of attention.
Ed, thank you very much for joining us today, and have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
The Oanda Podcast.